Hi, everybody. I'm Beatty Cohn-Bretos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. And for those of you who've been listening to the show for the last number of years, you know that I am a psychotherapist. I'm also a sex therapist, the author of the book For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I am also a columnist, a national speaker, an expert guest in national radio and television. And of course, I've been hosting, and I just love hosting the Ask Beatty Show now. It's almost 7 years, and I have a private practice in New York City and also in East Hampton. And I was just listening to Dr. Gary Null's promo. And he was addressing so many of the issues that I talk about on the Ask Beatty Show, which is really asking all of us to really take a look at an honest look at our life and our relationships and be critically honest when it comes to asking ourselves whether or not we are living our lives in constructive ways or in destructive or self-sabotaging ways, and to always, and if, I wish there was really a shortcut, to be willing to look at the underlying programming that either helped us to navigate our lives in healthy, constructive ways, or the converse, to find ourselves over and over and over again on paths and in relationships that are basically destructive and self-destructive and self-sabotaging. And of course, the real question then becomes, I mean, if you say to yourself, oh my goodness, what am I doing? All the relationships that I have been in for so many years have been relationships that have been either abusive or self-destructive or self-sabotaging. The real question always comes down to, what am I willing to do about it? Given the reality, of course, that we cannot change our history. And this is exactly what this show is about. It is about empowerment, because we talk about all of the things every single week that we actually can do to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. And of course, we talk a lot about mental health issues, depression, anxiety, sexuality, relationships, and how and what to do, not just to talk about, but what to do to maximize our physical and emotional well-being. And of course, my mantra, as many of you know, is acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can the things that get in the way of our life and of our relationships, and the things that really get in the way of our being able to live a joyful and happy life. And I'm not suggesting at all that doing this kind of work is easy. And yet, if we don't, life goes by and we continue very, very frequently in destructive, self-sabotaging, and self-destructive patterns of behavior. And then we wonder, why am I not happy? Why can I not find a healthy relationship? Why is my health, my physical health, and my mental health not in a place where I would like it to be? So ultimately, it really comes back to us and asking ourselves the important question, whether or not we are willing to really, really do some work. Because if we're looking, for example, at depression, I mean, in this country, there are 17 million adults in the United States who are suffering from true clinical depression. 40 million Americans are suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. If we're looking at the area of domestic violence, 4 women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partners. And look at the suicide rates. According to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. And if we're looking at relationships, and this is the thing, of course, I talk about so often, you look at all the self-help books and the shows and the therapists and the relationship coaches, and yet what is the reality of what is going on in this country? First marriages, 48% divorce rate for first marriages, 67% of second marriages end in divorce, and 74% of third marriages also end up in a divorce court. If we're looking, for example, at teenage dating violence, nearly 1 in 11 females and approximately 1 in 14 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. And about 1 in 8 females and 1 in 26 male high school students report having experienced sexual dating violence in the last year. And 1 in 3 girls, and this is a statistic, it is so troubling to me as a woman, as a wife, as a mom, 1 in 3 girls in the United States is a victim of physical, emotional, or verbal abuse from a dating partner. And only 33% of teens who were in abusive relationships ever told anyone about the abuse. And when parents were asked about the issue of teenage dating violence, 81% of parents believe that teen dating violence is not an issue. So what to do? I think it's really one thing to lament the problems and talk about these really depressing statistics. And yet when it comes to relationships, I mean, for me, the only thing that is ever going to change this trajectory is serious relationship education. And it still seems to be something that is not taken seriously by our educational institutions at all. And so we continue to talk about the statistics and we continue to be really disappointed in our relationship situations. And yet, I mean, there's no other way that I know to be able to make some real changes when it comes to marriage, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to the areas of domestic violence, than for people to engage in serious, serious relationship education. And yet this is something, for some strange reason, and you have to ask the questions why. The schools, the colleges, the universities, this is an area. I mean, this is an area that is so, so, so important if we're going to ever have a really healthy society. It's an area that is talked about a lot, but few, if any, institutions of learning have been really serious in incorporating relationship education into their curriculum. So that if there are any parents who are listening to the show right now, I mean, that would really be something I think really important to discuss with administrators of schools. And I mean, this has been a battle that I have been trying to fight for so, so, so many years. And I had an opportunity, and it was a really interesting opportunity, or so I thought it was, that in 2007, when I was living in Sarasota, Florida, Governor Jeb Bush, who was the governor at the time, he had actually contacted me. And we had talked about trying to implement my relationship education program based on my research, based on my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Love, into the high schools and colleges in the state of Florida. So he appointed me to the Florida Commission on Marriage and Family Support Initiatives. And I thought he was serious. I thought that there was going to be a real, real opportunity to make a difference and to help our students, to help our young people really learn about healthy relationships so that they could protect themselves, so that they could be empowered with knowledge that would really change the fabric of their personal lives. And I was a commissioner for 2 years, and I met with all the major decision makers in the state of Florida, the educators, the social service people. And the bottom line was, and I think I was really naive at the time, I thought that, you know, being in this kind of a position, that I would really be able to have some real impact, especially in being able to meet with these people face to face. And what was really upsetting was that after 2 years in meetings and talks and presentations, the bottom line was that nobody really cared at all about the subject, so that we then wonder, why are the domestic violence statistics continuing to soar? Why do we see teenage dating abuse, sexual abuse statistics that are also going up? And of course, we know the divorce statistics, we know the extramarital statistics. So either, this is the first question that I always ask people who are contacting me for therapy here in New York City and also in East Hampton, is whether or not they are going to be serious students of you know, getting to the root of their problems, going through a painful process of discovery. And yet it is critical. It is absolutely critical if we are then going to be able to come to terms with what the real issues are, the underlying issues that continue to get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And I think it's important that in, you know, creating the kind of life that we want for ourselves, we need to take a very systemic look at all of the different areas in our life that impact, that really impact our happiness, or also impact our unhappiness, including, you know, financial. And are you being financially responsible? It has been a crazy year with the pandemic, but in looking at your own finances, are you on board? Maybe it's time to look for another job. Maybe you're going to have to take on a little bit more work in order to be able to improve your financial situation. But you have to really be honest about it. And, you know, just pretending that your credit card debt is something that is going to disappear on its own, I mean, that is absolutely not going to happen. So finances is one area to really take an honest look at. And if you're looking at your career, how do you really feel about what it is you are doing? I mean, you may have been programmed years and years ago that you should go, or your family thought you should, you know, be in a particular profession or career, but are you contented with what it is that you are doing on a day-to-day basis? And if you are not, what thoughts, what plans do you have to be able to make some changes? And talking to career counselors and talking to people in other fields and talking to experienced and hopefully older and wiser people who've been through a similar kind of discovery process will really, really help you, because you do not want to end up being one of those people who is going to be miserable in your career for your entire life. So again, if it's not working, whether or not your money situation is not working, your career is not working, it really boils down to a question of, are you serious? And are you willing to do some work and look at some options to help you really get to where you want to go? And if you're looking at your personal life, your mental growth, your spiritual growth, your emotional growth, how are you feeling about these areas as well? If things are going well, then you should continue to do exactly what you are doing. But if things are off, What is the plan? And you know, I talk about that life is so complicated, and there are so many challenges that we do not need to take this journey on our own. And if you decide that you wanted to get some help, if you wanted to see a therapist, this doesn't mean that you are going to be in therapy for 1,000 years, but just getting a second opinion can really and truly make all the difference in the world. It can make all the difference in your life. So many young women and some men who are working, I mean, basically nonstop, where free time and hobbies and days off is something that people almost never, ever talk about. And yet it is so important to be able to divvy your days and divvy your weeks in ways so that you actually have some free time. And that free time might include doing absolutely nothing, and yet we all need to do it. So again, what I'm asking you to do is to take a really honest look at the totality of your life and see what changes, if any, that you need to actually make, and that means a plan of action, to improve the quality of your life, to feel more joyful, to feel happier. And if we're looking at health, weight, and are you in a good place in terms of your health? Are you exercising? Are you eating well? Are you watching the amount of sodium that you put into your foods? Because if we neglect our health, whether or not we're talking about our mental health or our physical health, and we're really, really asking for problems. And if we're looking at the area of obesity, Americans happen to be the most obese people in the world, even though we're constantly looking at advertisements about exercise and various different kinds of exercise equipment. And of course, you don't need exercise equipment. You can get up and you can take a walk around the block, and hopefully that walk will become a power walk. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Not only are you going to feel a lot better physically, but also mentally as well. And then, of course, if we're looking at the arena of relationships, our family relationships, our significant others, our friends, our business associates, what do you think? Are you basically happy with the people who you have in your life, including adult children and colleagues? And of course, for those of you who've been listening to me for the last many, many years, you know that my feelings about having toxic people in your life. And I've tried to live a life for many, many years with zero toxicity. And, you know, when most people talk about toxicity, you know, we talk about chemicals and we talk about, you know, toxic living. And of course, I talk a lot about toxic relationships. And if we allow it, toxic people will kill us in one way or another. So I'm really asking you to take an honest look at the people in your life. And I'm not suggesting at all that if there are problems that you are necessarily just going to give up and that you are going to extricate everyone, you know, from your life, or you're going to extricate yourself from relationships that are not working. But for relationships to work, there needs to be a commitment on the part of the people to try to mend the hurts, the pains, to deal with the challenges. And one of the things, of course, that I found in my research and in my work, and if we're talking about relationships, for relationships to succeed, there needs to be really a commitment, and of course, the skill as well, for great emotional communication and problem-solving skills. Because the reality is that there are going to be problems and issues in all of our relationships. and denying and avoiding them and complaining, you know, week in and week out about how unhappy you are with this person or with that person. I mean, that is not going to make any changes possible. So when relationships, whatever the relationships are, whether it's a relationship with your boss or with your adult child or with your spouse or with your friends or with your colleagues, when relationships start to really get off track and you've got that feeling, it's like, oh no, this is really not working. I'm really upset. I'm really angry. I'm really feeling depressed about the dynamic in this relationship. The question then comes back to you. You have to ask yourself, am I willing? Am I willing to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as I can with this person or with these people, the issues that are really interfering in our relationship, being able to be functional and being able to be happy? And if you have people who are saying no, 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 and if they just gaslight you or they ghost you and they don't want to deal, again, it comes back to you. Are these the kind of people that you want in your life? And I can speak from my own personal experience. These are not the kind of people that I want in my life or that I have in my life. And it's not an easy thing to do, especially if you're dealing with family or with close friends and you were hoping that the relationships were going to be happy and functional and constructive. And yet on a day-to-day basis, you are seeing how destructive and self-destructive and self-sabotaging it is for you to continue to engage in these relationships. And, you know, of course, a lot of people, they'll say to me, well, you know, can I change the other person? What is it that I can do to make the relationship better? Well, you know, yes, I think that taking personal responsibility is really important. But one thing, and if there's nothing else that, you know, I'm able to communicate to you today, is that we cannot change anybody but ourselves. So that if you are hoping that, you know, the person who you think you're attracted to or the person who you believe you're in love with, it's somehow you are going to have that power to be able to change their behavior or habits, you know, really you're going to have to think again, the only person, just please take this in, that you can change is yourself. So that if we are allowing people to overstep boundaries, if we are allowing people to physically or sexually or emotionally or verbally hurt us or abuse us in any way, that is on us. It's what we are going to permit. It's what we are going to enable. It's what we are basically encouraging, because we're saying to the person, if we're not setting limits, you know, it is okay. It is okay for you to continue to hurt me. And I know that for a lot of people who grew up in very dysfunctional, you know, families, this is not something that is, it's easy to do on your own. And if you're finding yourself, as so many of my patients have, that they go from one abusive relationship into another, at some point you really need to yourself, you know, really say to yourself, look, I need to get some help in order to stop this cycle. Because again, if you're looking for the other people to change, you're going to be looking for a very, very, very long time. And there are tips. I mean, and I, you know, talk about this every single week, that you can do every single day. And I ask the question every single week, whether or not you are on board, and, you know, on board in terms of eating healthily and interacting with, you know, emotionally healthy people, getting enough sleep, exercising, which of course is so important, having supportive people in your life. eliminating toxins, yes, chemical toxins, but also toxic people. And that oftentimes may mean family and friends. And doing things that are fun, positive visualization, dancing, listening to music. And what I found as well, and this is something that sometimes it's hard to get into this mindset, but giving back to others, doing for others. You can be in a really bad place in your life and in a really bad mental state. And yet those little gestures of reaching out and helping others, whether or not it's volunteering, can really make all the difference in the world. And I've been a psychotherapist and sex therapist now for over 35 years. And for me, sometimes I wonder who has gotten more out of these therapeutic relationships, whether or not it's been my patients or whether or not, it's been me. I mean, hopefully it's really been, a combination that we've all gained so much from the therapeutic process. But I found that in the giving, I have gotten so much back. I mean, I've treated thousands of people from every single walk of life, many people that I would never in a million years ever have met, in my own personal life. I've learned, I've grown, and as I say, in the giving, I think it's made me a much more sensitive and just basically a better human being. And I think it's so often and easy to just get caught up in our own little lives. And sometimes we just need to, take a step in a direction that would be, foreign to us, but in the giving, in the volunteering. I mean, it makes all the difference in the world. And I was suggesting to a patient a couple of days ago who's been very depressed and lonely for most of her life, go to an animal shelter, adopt a dog that maybe nobody has wanted. And in the giving, look at how much we all are able to get from our pets. And not only are we able to give to our pets, and of course our pets give, back to us a thousandfold. I mean, I found, of course, in New York City, Jim and I, we live on the Upper West Side. I mean, everybody, it seems, has a dog. And what a great way to be able to connect with other human beings now that we are all out and about, around our pets, around our walking around the neighborhood. So that there are always things that we can do, and it's very, very easy to get stuck. And that is why getting a second opinion, a new perspective on things can really make a great difference in our lives. So there's a couple of other things that I wanted to mentioned before I'm going to introduce my husband, sociologist Jim Bredos, who's also the host of an amazing television show on MNN, The Radical Imagination. But before I introduce him and we get a male perspective on a number of issues, I want to just remind you about the importance that all of us have in terms of dealing with our own, what I call skeletons in the closet and unfinished business that ultimately will always interfere with the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. Things perhaps, that happened or didn't happen to you when you were growing up in your family. We need to be willing to examine them and give ourselves permission to talk about them, and pretending that that was history and it was then and now is now, and that they are not getting in the way of our being able to really fully enjoy life. It is a myth. So we need to find, and it may mean a therapist, and it oftentimes means a really good therapist. And remember, not all therapists are the same, and you have to do a lot of research if you're going to find yourself a really good therapist. But we need to be willing to emotionally work through as best as we possibly can what did and did not happen in our past that continues to get in the way of our life. And we need to understand we can't change our history. We can't change what happened in our families. We can't change the sexual abuse or the verbal abuse or the physical abuse, but we can understand what it was that went on so that we are then able to live in the present, to live in the moment without continuing to have one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And in doing so, and in going through this kind of process, we are then able to stop beating ourselves up and blaming ourselves for mistakes that we have made. And, you know, I talk a lot about lessons to be learned, lessons to be learned that we can actually implement today. You know, for example, perhaps there are amends that you need to try and make. I mean, after all, there's so much family estrangement. But the most important thing, the most important thing that we can do is to try as best as we possibly can to deal with issues directly and try to resolve the things as best as we possibly can so that we can live a happier life. And, you know, as I say this over and over and over again, we do not need to navigate the challenges and the complexities of life on our own. So, you know, as the Nike slogan tells us all the time, sometimes you just have to, you know, take the bull by the horns and just do it. And it's amazing. It's amazing how you can actually free yourself from the chains that have kept you chained down in your life. So I hope you take some of this. I hope you actually take all of this information really to heart. Well, Jim, my darling, I want a male perspective on a couple of issues, and there is a story here that I would love for you and me to discuss.
Sure.
Big headlines in the New York Daily News today. New York surgeon seeking divorce claims that the beauty queen wife led a secret life as a high-priced call girl. And just to give the audience a little bit of background information. So here we have a prominent Manhattan spinal surgeon. His storybook marriage to a one-time beauty queen turned irreversibly ugly after he happened to stumble upon her secret life as a high-end hooker, according to stunning court reports obtained by the Daily News. So Dr. Han Jo Kim, he seeks an annulment of his once happy union, or so he thought it was a happy union, with former Miss USA hopeful Regina Turner, alleging that the dark-haired beauty with the beaming smile earned nearly, now listen to this, Jim, she earned nearly $700,000 in cash. From her paying clients, were leading a lucrative double life before and after their November 2015 wedding. So what
only
do
5 years,
you think?
Huh? They were married 5 years,
right?
5 years, and did she share this financial windfall?
No, she had a double life. He
a
didn't
double
know
life.
About
well,
it.
I mean, you know, maybe she. Okay, so how did he find out?
Okay, well, this is what happened, and I'm actually looking at a picture of Miss Connecticut USA. Listen to this.
Yeah.
How careful we have to be if we have secret lives on our computers or on phones, because while using a computer in one of their million-dollar homes, Dr. Kim discovered a raunchy iMessage meant for her, meant for Turner, that revealed her sexual encounter with another man, the documents alleged, and things only grew worse from there. So what this doctor, I mean, and believe me, doctors, lawyers, this happens to people all the time. So, you know, because you're rich and wealthy and maybe a physician, you are not immune from life's turmoil.
Well, maybe not your wife is a high-priced call girl, but things happen, there's affairs. And so that's what you're sort of saying, right?
Okay. Well, exactly. Yes. So he learned from other wealthy men who were paying. So it was not just one man, you know, this sugar baby, sugar daddy kind of thing that was going on.
Yeah.
He learned that other wealthy men were paying his wife, including a prominent businessman, a New York-based real estate executive, and an award-winning lighting designer. That they were, you know, she was seeing all of these men, and she was making a fortune from basically being a high class. I'm not sure what even high class means in this context.
Well, she was making
by being
a
prostitute.
A
she was a prostitute.
Well, gosh, there's a lot we don't know. I mean, was there, you know, what sort of age difference was there?
Does that matter at all, what the age difference was?
Well, it's one of the variables that you take in. How, I guess what you're trying to say here is, again, we need to choose our possible mates.
Bottom line is unsexy and unromantic. As
well,
my book and my 10-step formula is, bottom line, he married somebody who he did not know.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, is he interested in all?
No.
It doesn't sound like he wants to salvage this.
Obviously, the marriage has been annulled.
Okay, that's okay. So, well, what is there to say? He made a big mistake. And that's that. And hopefully he won't make it again. So they go their separate ways. Are there children involved?
Fortunately not. And this was a young woman, basically, who lied about everything. And I want to read, you know, some of what was in the New York Daily News. Her alleged deception.
Yeah.
It began in 2013. So this was actually before they
married.
Before they
married. Okay.
Yes. When she told, Kim that she had attended the University of Connecticut for 3 years to study science before taking a leave of absence to compete in the Miss USA. In reality, according to Kim's papers, this woman, Turner, never graduated from high school. So the lies began. And
let me answer, did they get into what, I mean, he finds this, he's shocked by this, but were they relatively happy? Was there any mention of things were going along pretty well until this happened, until you find out about this?
Well, that's a really good question because he...
And if he maybe never found that, I mean, yeah, I'm just being provocative here. If he never found out and they just went along and presumably...
He was obviously blinded by her beauty. For example, she allegedly claimed that she needed to frequently visit China for weeks at a time in connection, listen to this, Jim, with an app that she was developing to let users snap a photo of clothes and find out where the garments are sold. So he was living world.
His name... He's an Asian. Is he Chinese?
Yes.
Okay. And let me again. They met while what? He was in medical school, or he's a rather
know.
Prominent,
very prominent,
very prominent,
very
prominent, and probably very busy.
And very wealthy.
Very wealthy. Very
yes. Prominent.
So
yes.
Obviously communication issues. Didn't talk about things very much.
Well, again, this is one of the issues that is so important, you know, when we are wanting to have a relationship with someone, you know. And I used to apologize, Jim, and say that my formula, my book, it's so unsexy, it's so unromantic, which it is. It's unsexy and unromantic. And yet, you know, here we have again another situation. And of course, we wouldn't be reading about this in the New York Daily News if he wasn't very wealthy and if he wasn't a very prominent surgeon, you know, where somebody was duped and married somebody who he obviously didn't know at all.
It still would be interesting to have interviews with these people and see what they now would say. What each side would say about this.
What is there to say?
Well, I don't know.
She lied. She was a prostitute.
Well, still, what sort of explanation might she give? There's some reason that she was doing this, and there was some reason that he was, as you say, he didn't marry her.
He didn't know.
Well.
He didn't know.
I understand. But still, it would still be interesting to find out now that this is another marriage that has ended up in a divorce, to find out
annulment.
Yeah, oh, annulment. Okay. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Okay. So, it sounds like maybe she was looking at certain expectations in the relationship that was maybe different than his. I don't know.
Well, you know, here we have an online, roundup of the most well-paid employees at City Hospital showed. And listen to this.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about, was she after his money? Clearly, he earned $3.2 million as a surgeon in 2018. The couple lived in an apartment on East 57th, which, of course, is a very ritzy area in the Upper East Side of New York City, estimated to be worth $6.5 million. They have a waterfront home on the North Fork of Long Island worth at least, $2.5 million. But again, how careful. And it's not about blaming this man. It's about how careful we all have to be in assessing who the people who we think we are in love with, who we think we want to marry.
Maybe he didn't. Well, I'm agreeing with you, but perhaps he was so busy and making money and operating and so on, he didn't have the time or didn't have the inclination or certainly didn't do what he should have done. And maybe he just was, again, enamored by her beauty, and that was enough.
But the problem is, if you look at the divorce statistics, and I'm not familiar with the annulment statistics, and that would be another really interesting number, is that we're continuing to do so badly.
Right.
The divorce statistics continue to go up. The extramarital statistics go up. The domestic violence statistics go up. And I maintain that there are, and you've heard me say this 1,000 times, that there are 3 reasons why this is all happening. That if we're not in a good place, if we're not solid, if we don't know the ingredients that go into a healthy relationship, and if we are not willing to do my in-depth assessment.
I understand.
That's the bottom line.
This is all the physicians out there. Listen, I have a terrific cardiologist. I have a wonderful general practitioner. But let me also say, as a sociologist, many studies have pointed out that especially men in the medical field often are, I'm trying to be gentle here, have a ways to go to become more socially adept.
Competent.
Well, yeah, I mean, because again, they're so busy busy studying and setting up their career and so on and spending long, long hours. And I think your point is well taken, that even how busy you may be and how intense your career and stresses are in that world, if you are interested in this part of your world, this relationship world, you've got to, as you would say, do due diligence.
Well, we assess everything.
Right,
Jim.
Right.
I assess beauty products.
We assess cars.
We assess our cell phones. We assess computers. People are online all the time assessing. They're assessing products.
Well, this guy probably, spent more time studying an x-ray on somebody's spine than he did spending time on one who he was marrying.
Well,
that was a little tongue in cheek there.
But clearly.
But so there we go. So hopefully,
but it's not just doctors.
Right. Sure.
It's that what we are seeing more and more and more is that people are hooking up and marrying and cohabitating right. and having, in quotes, relationships with people who they really don't know. And then they wonder why that life starts to completely fall apart.
And they have to be very clear on what they're getting involved in, what they their expectations are, and what they want out of a relationship. Maybe he just wanted, I don't know, a traditional, old-fashioned, traditional doctor's wife, which
well,
he obviously wasn't.
Obviously. clearly, he wanted a beauty queen.
Well, okay.
And he got a beauty queen.
Yeah.
But what's so interesting, he checked, and again, this is not about blaming
Yeah, I don't know,
this
I understand.
Man. It is about educating, and I talk about the Yes Beauty Show, is about empowerment. What
yeah.
have we yeah. learned? What are the lessons that we can all learn? Now, next week, next week I have a new author on, okay? Mm-hmm. Her name is Robin Lieberman,
yeah.
and her book, I'm not sure really whether it's an autobiography, it's not being presented as that. It's about, you know, having been in a, or some woman having been in a an abusive relationship. And what I maintain that if you are reading my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, and if you are committed to using my formula, and the formula and my research showed that it takes about a year mm-hmm. to find out who somebody is and isn't, and going through all of the unromantic questions.
Well, they had at least a couple of years, right? They were knowing each other 2013.
Which is interesting. Yes, yeah. they did.
And I'm not
right.
trying to be flippy or cruel to the good doctor here, but it could be that he was sort of socially immature in all of this. And I don't know how this is going to sound, but maybe he would have been better off going to a high class condo until he was ready to settle down.
No,
who knows?
But you know, absolutely.
Oh, you're taking
it. I mean,
maybe we don't know.
He buried yeah. his head in the sand like millions of people yeah. do.
In his North Shore estate.
In his okay, but what does that tell us? You can have North Shore estates and apartments on the
yeah.
on the Upper East
Point
Side.
Well taken.
That does not equate to happiness. It does not equate to finding healthy love right. and relationships. We have to do our due diligence.
And you're saying about your guest next week is going to be what now?
She's going to be talking about a woman. I don't know whether, as I say, it's an autobiography. It's being presented as fiction. About a woman who was in an emotionally abusive relationship and the steps that she took to be able to really find herself
and try to make a decently healthy relationship. Is that right?
Problem solution.
She had therapy? She went through
therapy? I don't know.
You'll find out.
We're going to.
This is a work of fiction.
Yes.
Okay.
So-called work of fiction.
And your guest is a...
Robin Lieberman, who I haven't met. We've been emailing in the last couple of days. She was a guidance counselor.
Okay.
So she worked with children for
high
her
school
entire for her entire career. Yeah, I'm going to find out a lot more out about
her.
That's
very interesting.
But again, how careful we have to be. You know, we're careful with the kind of paint that we're going to put on the walls. Mm. We're so careful, you know, as consumers with, you know, does this car measure up to, you know, consumer report standards? And yet we continue over and over and over again to miss the marks.
I understand. But the vagaries of life and the mysteries, I mean, people sometimes have excellent, wonderful, healthy relationship and love at first sight. And they're married in a couple of months. My grandparents,
your grandparents were married
within 3 months.
Your grandparents
and they had a fantastic relationship for 68 years. But you're absolutely right. You could spend 5 years analyzing and end up getting married and getting divorced within a year. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
But there is a process.
Yeah.
There is an evidence-based process that people can choose to
buy into.
Right. But people change over a course of a relationship. So, we have to reevaluate where you're at, where your person,
Of course people change, but that's where emotional communication and problem solving skills and emotional intimacy and a commitment to the relationship.
What if that person that you had married 10, 15, whatever, 20 years ago is no longer the person or has the same desires, expectations as you now? Either you could try to.
Okay.
And if it's not, that's it.
If it's not, it's not.
Onto
the next relationship. Right. But I feel, I feel really badly, for this doctor. I mean, it's become, of course, very public.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it is about, can we learn something from a story like this? I mean, these days, people are meeting on online. And, I have a patient who is a sugar baby.
She's a sugar baby looking for a sugar daddy.
Looking for sugar daddies and has had, in quotes, a lot of success, finding a number of sugar daddies. However, the sugar daddies that she has chosen to be with have all been physically and sexually and emotionally abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why she called me, it was not to get out of that sugar baby, sugar daddy cycle.
Right.
It was to try to figure out how she was going to be able to keep her job, because she was getting very depressed and she's an alcoholic and she has a lot of other issues. But what was interesting is that she was she's a young, beautiful, smart, I love this young woman, but her desire to get out of that world is not there.
Even with your help and guidance and working through some of this stuff, may in fact even continue on in that world, finding, I guess, more healthy sugar daddies, or maybe break out of it. Or not.
I mean, she told me, and I mean, I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks. She's been out of town, but a couple of Saturdays ago, she had 3 meet and greets with 3 potential sugar daddies.
So like an open house.
An open house to see what their expectations. Her bottom line is money. She completely disassociates when she is doing things sexually. She is not there. She is in another world.
So her questioning stops after she finds out how much money the guy has. Well, I mean, a few other little incidentals where they live.
Right, because they're married or not is a non-issue for her. For her, it has been about the
money.
Are
there any other issues that she will bring up besides?
I hope so. I hope she's going to do a better job
in assessing.
She has done a very poor job because she has been physically and sexually abused by all of the sugar daddies.
Right.
And one sugar daddy.
What might she have asked to have maybe found the trouble that she was heading into? How could she have gotten to know these guys a little more to be able to tell, wow, this guy has trouble here?
Well, I think that since she probably was not going to take a year to find out who these people were.
Right, that's for sure.
To at least be aware of the ingredients that do go into a decent relationship.
Right. Even a sugar daddy.
Even a sugar daddy. And then when the signs.
Maybe a trial. Sugar daddy rental or something?
Well, it doesn't
rental with possibilities of buying, if we want to use real estate.
Well, but I think that she would have to look at the signs, whether or not the sugar daddies respected her, whether or not they were abusive, whether or not they had drug issues, whether or not they were very sadistic when she had sex with them. I mean, there were a lot of things
she would have to discover. But you could ask, but some what you just remember or say
the asking would
have
enough.
To be
no.
What would have to be after they have signed the agreement that they're either living with each other.
You know what I believe in? It's a really good point that you just raised, because I have a number of people, of course, who are online and looking for love. What people say, at least as far as I'm concerned, is irrelevant. It's not what you say. It's what you do. Mm-hmm. And you cannot ever, in my opinion, get to know anybody without having face-to-face, day-to-day, real-life experiences.
So a trial, sugar baby, sugar daddy agreement. Trial, I don't know, months? What would the
Well, they're
weeks?
All, but you see, she has a number of different arrangements going on at the same time. And these other men
so
don't know.
Not necessarily living with any one of them, although she has lived with.
She has lived. Right. She has.
It gets complicated.
She lived with one. And the irony is that as soon as she started to see me, he threw her out.
Yeah. No,
that was, that was a very interesting thing that after my first meeting with her, she actually came home and she was living with a man who was 45 years older than her. And she
you only have a short period of time working with this woman before she's going to, you know, decide what to do. What can you help her in this, in the brief time that she's going to have to really evaluate? What can you offer here, her, so that she can have some before really going much further? What can you offer? What should she be asking, looking for in this maybe initial interview?
Well, I mean, it's I think that's actually a really good question. And I think that in these initial interviews, everybody, of course, is going to be on their best behavior. And I feel in situations like this, there's no way to know.
Right.
You have to play it out. You really have to play it out. And she should, you know, if people are going to be involved in these sorts of arrangements, let's see how he treats me. Let's see if he respects me, even though it's an arrangement. I mean, look, they're high class call girls. They're prostitutes. Right. Okay. Let's call it really what it is. And to see, as she would get to know these different men, how they behaved.
Sugar daddy. So they're supposedly supposed to be sweet guys.
Well, these guys that this woman who I treat, they were not
they
sweet.
They should be grateful and
they
gracious.
Appeared to be sweet. First, yeah. But as she played it out, she was very lucky that she was not killed.
Should there be some sort of rating service?
There's no maybe, this is not a rating service.
No, Jeff. I mean for the people that put them together online.
There are different there's Ashley Madison, there's different there's different places that you go online.
You raise so many questions, I'm sorry.
To find
pique my curiosity.
To find the sugar daddy and for the sugar daddy to find the sugar babies. But I'm looking at the clock right now and it is 3:57 and we could continue talking about this, but right now I need to wind down this show here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I want to thank you all so much for listening and tuning in. And absolutely, I want you to listen to my interview next week with Robin Lieberman. I think it's going to be a really great, great interview. Her book is really, it's an important book. It's an important book for all of us who are interested in relationships to read. And I leave you with my two weekly messages. And the first message is that we need to make sure that we do everything possible, whether you're a sugar baby looking for a sugar daddy or whatever, to do things that are really in our best interest. And of course, secondly, we need to do a much, 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 much better job in making sure that we find ways to really love each other. So
and
thanks
thank
so
you
much.
For being my sweetie.
Well, you are
my sugar.
Sweetie. We did a good assessment.
Oh, we did.
Yes, we
thank
did.
Thank you.
Okay, goodbye, everybody, and I'll talk with you next week. Bye-bye.